Hello, everyone. This is Chase, and welcome to the RTR Forward podcast, where we talk about everything and anything Magic the Gathering. It's been a little while since I've last spoken to any of you guys. I've had a lot going on in my personal life and a lot going on in the world, as right now we're in the middle of a pandemic. Pretty crazy times we live in, where we're actually encouraging people to stay inside their homes. It's the introvert's paradise. For me, I don't mind it as much. I can work from home with my job, so I'm able to work fully remotely. So I unfortunately still have to work, but I know quite a few people that aren't working, and you're still getting paid to not work, and I know quite a few people that have lost their jobs. So it's really just a very unfortunate situation for everyone, but it's kind of also impacted the podcast a little bit now that we're kind of in this new social distancing world. Can't really have in-person guests anymore until, you know, where you get the all clear eventually. But so it's just going to be me. I might see if I can try to bring somebody on digitally. Not really sure the kind of workings of figuring that out. And I'll figure that out eventually. But today we have a lot of exciting special things. But before we begin, just a quick little, let's talk a little background. So obviously it's been a while since I've released an episode. We're sitting on about 3 weeks now, and for that I apologize. I've had a lot go on. I've been very busy. Even though I'm working from home now, the stress of my job has become a lot, you know, heavier on me. And it doesn't help that last week, in the middle of the week, my computer crashed. And actually what happened was, it was a work app I was using, did not like another app on my PC, some kind of weird voodoo magic, and it corrupted my main hard drive, which had my Windows operating system and a bunch of important files and programs and stuff like that. So I basically lost a lot of stuff that day, and I had to reinstall Windows on a new drive, had to get everything set back up, and I'm still kind of rebuilding. I've lost a lot of programs, I've lost a lot of sound settings, I've lost just a lot of stuff. I was able, though, to retain a little bit of the podcast stuff, so I was able to retain a few graphics, I was able to retain the intro, and we are currently working on potentially getting a new intro as well. So just a lot has happened, and it's really set me back a lot, and so we're trying to get back into it, trying to get back to the grind, and what a better day to get back into the grind than the Ikoria reveal. So that happened today. Today is April 2nd, and this morning, Ikoria was revealed. We got an amazing trailer with starring Vivian and a really crazy monster fight that basically happened. It was really intense. The music playing, I don't remember the name of it, but as soon as I showed my wife that trailer, she immediately goes, "That's Shrek. That music's from Shrek." And I go, "What?" And she's like, "Yeah, that music's from Shrek." And so I Google it, I look it up, and sure enough, from the first movie, right as, what is his name, Lord Farquaad is sending a bunch of knights to attack Shrek in his little castle, that's the song that plays as Shrek is just beating the crap out of everybody. And so from now on, anytime I think of the Ikoria trailer, or anytime I watch it, as soon as that song hits, I immediately think of Shrek, and I can't not think of Shrek. So she basically ruined the trailer for me. But let alone, I watched the trailer on my own before then, so it wasn't ruined just yet, and I actually thought it was a really cool trailer. So if you haven't seen it yet, give it a watch, and also think of Shrek while you watch it. But so a lot of things were announced today. We're gonna kind of just walk through them. We're just gonna hit the highlight cards, that are the mythics, the rares, a few of the mechanics, the key planeswalkers, stuff like that. And let's just kind of jump right into it. So going to Ikoria, this is a brand new plane. It's basically a plane of monsters, big monsters. I guess they're, if you've ever seen like Pacific Rim, if you've ever seen that movie, it's kind of like that. So the giant kaiju is the name of the big monsters. And they're just freaking everywhere. And they're just attacking civilizations, attacking cities. We got people cowering in fear, building up these big, huge, monumental cities just to defend themselves against these giant creatures. So we're just kind of thrown into this world, and it's really intense, and there's going to be some really awesome things in this set. So first off, let's talk mechanics. So there's two new mechanics, and there's one old mechanic, and there's another thing that's kind of a mechanic, but it's kind of not a mechanic, and we'll talk about that in a second. So our first, I guess our highlight mechanic, and this one kind of hit me out of nowhere, So it's called Companion. So this one, no idea where this came from. This came out of left field. So basically, if you enjoy playing Commander, okay, if you enjoy playing Brawl, just imagine doing that in a standard format. And that's basically what Companion is. So Companion is an ability on legendary creatures. And I think there's a cycle of 10 of them. They're all going to be hybrid colors. They're going to be the guild colors. So you're going to get one of each guild color pair. And so the one that actually we saw today was Karuga, the Macro Sage. It's a dinosaur hippo legendary creature, 5/4, 4/3, and 2, hybrid blue-green. It has the companion ability, saying that if your starting deck contains only cards with converted mana cost 3 or greater, and land cards, it's allowed to be your companion. So basically what that means is if it's your companion, and you've built your deck, you know, pertaining to its specifications, then it sits in your sideboard, and it's basically like an extension to your hand. So that one specific companion, as long as you meet the criteria of its companion ability, it can sit in your sideboard, and it can be basically a part of your hand, and at any point, once you have enough mana, you can cast it, and it's just basically like casting a creature, so it comes onto the field. Typically, a lot of these have enter the battlefield effects. This one does, so when it enters the battlefield, it draws a card for each other permanent you control with converted mana cost 3 or greater. So they all have little different effects that kind of benefit you. And the fact that you can just kind of, it'll always be in your hand until you play it is really nice. And I think it actually dodges hand hate as well, because it's technically over here, like outside of your deck. It's not technically part of your hand. It's kind of over there. I'm pretty sure it dodges hand hate for now, unless they reveal a hand hate that targets companions in your sideboard. But they're really kind of neat. So this one has the deck building restriction of, you know, making sure you have only things that cost 3 or greater converted mana cost and land cards. So in a way, if you've ever played another card game called Hearthstone, they at one point they had these like conditional cards as well. So there were a few of them that cared about singleton. So you only have one copy of a specific card in your deck. So you've got only one ofs. There were two that cared about even cost cards in your deck, one cared about odd cost cards, and those cards kind of benefited you in some kind of way. So that's kind of what these are in a way as well. There's going to be 10 of them. So far we've only gotten a handful, but they're kind of neat. I don't really know what to think about them. And when I first like watched the reveal trailer, I was really confused. I was like, what are these things? And so these things are available in Commander as well. So Commander and Brawl, you can have your Commander and you can have a Companion. So in Commander, that means you can have 101 cards in your deck. Technically 101 cards. You know, you have the 99, the Commander, and then your Companion, which sits in like a pseudo sideboard. And you can cast it at any time. It has to follow your Commander's identity, stuff like that. But it's technically your 101st card, which is really neat. And so the same goes for Brawl. So you can technically run 61 cards. Which is really interesting, and I'm interested to see what these different abilities are going to be on these cards and what their restrictions are going to be for deck building and if they're going to be standard playable. So let's talk about Karuga real quick. So this is the one I just talked about. It's the dinosaur hippo. Based on its characteristics, it immediately makes me think of like the Fires deck. So Fires of Invention, which is a really popular deck right now. It's typically Jeskai, and since you can cast this for, you know, 2 blue, because it is a hybrid blue-green, 2 blue and 3 for 5 mana, you can put it in that deck, and you can cast it, and just imagine, you know, playing Fires on 4, and then, you know, drop in your big 4/4 with Flying and Scries, and then next turn, you play a big boy, and let's say your hand's empty, all right? You played a big elemental. Maybe it's the one that, I don't know, makes you discard and draw. And maybe you have like one card in hand. And you're like, and then you just get a land. And you're like, whatever. Well, then let's just drop down Karuga. Because you can also cast him for free off of Fires. And then immediately he comes in. He sees your Fires. He sees one of your elementals. He sees the 4/4 flyer that has already 3 targets to draw cards. So you immediately draw 3 cards. And now you've got this 5/4. Just straight value. And it's always in your hand if you play a deck like that. And if you think about it, the Fires decks only really play things called 3 mana cost and up. They don't play a lot of ones and twos for the most part, right? They're playing They're playing the 3-mana board technical board wipe that deals 3 damage to each creature. They're playing Teferi. They're playing Fires. They're playing all different Cavaliers, stuff like that. And so this might see kind of a home in that because that deck already kind of, you know, lives up to that restriction, that deck building restriction. So I think Companion is going to be really neat. We may see a few that actually see play in Standard. I don't know how impactful they're going to be, but they do seem pretty neat, and it'll be another fun way to kind of build decks. And so then our next mechanic, so this is another mechanic. This one, there were a few spoilers. If you're paying attention, or you're into that kind of stuff, there were a few spoilers last week of some, I think it was some Spanish cards out of a pack that was delivered to a store early and actually had the keyword mutate on it. So people were already kind of familiar with a mutate ability, but at the time, from that little spoiler, I didn't actually have what mutate did. It just said mutate. So people were thinking, oh, it's you can cast stuff from your graveyard, or oh, it does something else. Nobody really knew what it does. So mutate is the new ability that's going to be on quite a few of these monsters. And basically, it's an alternative way to cast this creature. But you're not technically casting the creature. You're casting it as a spell that is basically going to enhance the creature that you're targeting. So basically, it's going to be some amount of mana. And so let's look at one card here. So this is a Luna, Apex of Wishes. It's a 6/6 Beast Elemental Dinosaur Legendary Creature. And it costs 2, a green, a blue, and a red for five mana. And it has a mutate ability of 3, hybrid red, green, blue, blue. So that's 6 total mana. You can cast this spell for its mutate cost. Put it over or under target non-human creature you own. They mutate into the creature on top plus all the abilities from underneath it. So really kind of interesting effect, really kind of confusing at first. You really kind of have to watch it in action. And luckily Wizards posted alongside a few of these reveals this really nice video that kind of just explains it in a way. So in a way, if you think about this, if you've played back, you know, a few years back in the original Theros, this kind of reminds you of Bestow a little bit. But it's quite a bit different, and it's quite a bit more powerful as well. Unlike Bestow, if you mutate on another creature, if they kill that creature after you've mutated, after it's on the field, both creatures go to the graveyard, okay? It's treated kind of like an enchantment in that way. But if, let's say, you're targeting that creature, let's say you're mutating Iluna onto, I don't know, a squirrel, and in response, they kill the squirrel, well, Iluna no longer has a target to mutate on, so instead, she just comes onto the battlefield, and now you've got a flying trample 6/6 for 6 mana. Not the greatest rate, but you still got it, so you're not entirely punished in that regard. It still does get countered, and stuff like that, but it's really interesting. So basically you line it up to where the card on top has the power and toughness that you care about and the abilities on it. Okay, you care about the power and toughness, the abilities, the name, and the mana cost on the card on top. Cards on the underneath it, all you care about are the abilities. You don't care about the power and toughness, anything like that. So if you had a 1/1 squirrel and you decide to put a Luna underneath it, now you have a 0 cost 1/1 squirrel with flying trample, and whenever this creature mutates, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land permanent card. Put that card onto the battlefield or into your hand. That's Iluna's ability. So you can really just kind of stack up creatures and make one big monstrosity. But it is kind of, you know, susceptible to removal. So if you do, you know, like, hey, technically, it's a squirrel with all these abilities, so I'm going to kill the squirrel. Well, now everything goes to the graveyard. Your big mutant creature is no more. So I think it's going to be really interesting. There are a lot of really neat mutate effects, and a lot of these creatures have this little clause on them that says, when this creature mutates, do something. So if you can stack multiple on one creature and just get all these different triggers of these abilities, and it's just really interesting, and it's kind of flows with their thought process of creating your own monster, which is really cool. I'm really interested to see how this plays out. It's definitely more online friendly than it is paper friendly, and as we continue, you'll kind of realize, wow, a lot of this is going to be great online and kind of maybe a little confusing in paper, which I think this is, as they've released sets and with, MTG Arena being so important now, you will start to realize like, hey, some of these things were actually created for MTG Arena. I don't know if they're necessarily created with paper in mind. They do work well in paper, but they're maybe a little bit harder to execute. This is something, a lot of these things is something that Magic would have never considered doing, a few years back before it had this robust online client to play on. But now that they have that, they can kind of get a little more wilder with things because they have a way to kind of moderate it and just make it simple on if you play online, stuff like that. So I'm really interested to see how you can play it in store. If you haven't heard, iCoreo has actually been pushed back for us for non-Asian countries. So if you live, in an Asian country, then you'll actually get to play at your local game store April 15th. If you do not, then you're going to have to wait till May 15th to play at your local game store and potentially even longer, depending on, what country you live in and how you're affected by this big thing that's happening to everybody. So it really depends and kind of sucks. I really hope I'm going to be able to play this in a store. I think it'd be really fun to play in a pre-release. Just all these exciting new cards, ways to mutate. You could pull a companion out of one of your packs and build a deck around a companion. I just think it'd be really fun. So I'm really curious how Wizards decides to handle this if these conditions persist for longer than May. So that's mutate. Really interesting mechanic. Really interested to see how it's going to play. Like, I have no idea how it's going to play. Does seem really fun, does seem really interesting, but it's a lot of investment with the one we've seen so far being 6 mana just to mutate it. And it's 6 mana, three of it's colored. So it's really a big investment. It should be interesting. So then finally, other than the one returning mechanic that we'll talk about in just a second, there is a new thing called ability counters. I think they're called ability counters. I don't actually know, but basically what they are they're little representations of all the little mechanics that a creature can have, abilities that a creature can have. So like flying, hexproof, trample, death touch, menace, stuff like that. So these little physical tokens, or online, they'll probably just be written in the text box on the card. But we have different cards that can give other creatures these abilities that they don't normally have. So one example is Luminous Brood Moth. It's a creature insect 3/4 for 4 mana. That's 2/2 white. Has flying, and whenever a creature you control without flying dies, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a flying counter on it. So let's say you've got one of your knights or something else that doesn't have flying, maybe one of the cavaliers that's not blue, and they die. Okay, well, let's return it. This card will let you return it back to the battlefield and give it a flying counter. So it immediately, it can fly, it comes back, could potentially get another enter the battlefield trigger. I think this card is really good. It's surprising to see a card of this power in white. So white's really starting to get back up there. This is going to be a really good card in white. It basically makes your non-flyers very sticky. And if you have some way to, remove counters, so if you have a way like to remove a flying counter from a creature that you just want to keep bringing back, you can do that. And this card has really like enabled a lot of really silly strategies. So in standard, there's a card called Soul Diviner. It's blue and a black for a 2/3. It's a creature and it has a activated ability. You tap it and remove a counter from, I think it's a creature, planeswalker, land, or enchantment, something like that, or artifact, and you draw a card. So if you're playing some kind of weird Esper deck and you wanted to have Soul Diviners just take a flying counter off a creature if it's about to die or if something's about to happen to it, and then you draw a card and that creature comes back due to Luminous Broodmoth. So I think this card's going to be really good. In Eternal formats, people have already keynoted that Solemnity, which is the enchantment from, I believe it's Hours of Devastation, in the Amonkhet block, where it basically says players and XML, like all these things, creatures, artifacts, enchantments, lands, can't have counters placed on them. So basically, if you have that on the field, and it's 2/1 white, so it's a white card. You have that on the field, and you have Luminous Broodmoth on the field. Basically, anything that dies besides Luminous Broodmoth doesn't get a counter. It will never gain flying from it. So it'll just keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. And there's a lot of really interesting combos. Like you could have one of the Titans from Theros Beyond. You could have Kroxa out. Play Kroxa. It's going to sack itself if you played it from your hand. But then Luminous Broodmoth's going to bring it back. And Salamity is not going to put a counter on it. So it's just going to keep coming back. And it's just going to drain your opponent for three. Drain them for three. Drain them for three. Drain them for three. Drain them for three. You can do the same with Uro. You can just infinitely draw cards and gain life. Obviously, you're going to deck yourself eventually with Uro. Whereas with Kroxa, you're just going to kill your opponent. Because you're eventually going to discard their hand and then just constantly deal three damage to them. So I think it's really interesting. It could promote a pretty interesting combo. I don't know how good it'll be, but it is fun to think about, though. So I really like this card, and I really like the fact that you'll be able to basically use different cards to give specific creatures certain abilities that maybe otherwise they would ever be able to gain in a form like that. I do think it will be kind of confusing, potentially, if you don't have the right tokens to represent that you're giving them specific abilities. Luckily, they're going to include punch out tokens, so you can be like, this thing says flying, he's got flying, this thing says that touch, stuff like that. So it's really interesting. I'm interested to see a few more cards on it and go from there. And then finally, we've got a returning mechanic. It is cycling. So if you're not familiar with what cycling does, it's basically an ability on some cards that says, you can cycle this for, I don't know, two colors, man. You can cycle it for two blue, something like that. You discard this card and draw a card. Simple as that. Some of them do have abilities that say, you know, when you cycle this card, do this. Stuff like that. So it's just a really nice mechanic. It's very limited friendly. So if you play in the limited formats, it's just such a good ability. Like, you know, you draw a 7 mana creature on turn 2 and limited, and you're like, I'd rather just, you know, pay 2-3 mana and discard that and draw a new card, because I'm not going to be playing this anytime soon. It's more value to me if I just get a new card. So this mechanic's coming back. I'm curious to see what it'll be on. It's very likely that potentially we could see the other half of the cycle lands in this set. So no lands have been announced yet. No rare land cycle has been announced, but it has been confirmed that there will be a rare land cycle in this set. And so very curious if maybe we'll see the, I guess it's the enemy cycle lands that we haven't seen yet. And that'd be pretty interesting, because it seems like, from what I'm understanding, is this set is kind of built around wedges in a way. So a lot of the legendary mythical monsters are wedge colors. So like I just said, Aluna, the Apex of Witches, is Teemer. A few more that we're going to talk about are some of the other wedge colors. So I think it'd be very interesting, and it kind of ties in with the cycling mechanic that's already in the set. So maybe we'll see these cycle lands again. Maybe we'll see standard slow down quite a bit with, you know, next year being, you know, temples and cycle lands. I think potentially, you know, next in Zendikar next fall, we're probably going to see the enemy Tango lands. And so then we got more lands that could potentially enter tapped. I think they're really going to slow down standard here. And from some of the cards that I'm seeing, a lot of them are, you know, more heavily costed. So we're seeing 4-drops. We're seeing really powerful 4-drops, really powerful 5-drops, really powerful 6-drops. We're not seeing a whole lot of things in the lower spectrum just yet. But it's still early in the season. It's day one, and we've got a lot of cards to talk about, though. So let's move on. We've got some Planeswalkers to talk about. So obviously, you know Vivian's in the set. Saw it on little card art and your little pre-release packs and Theros Beyond. You saw her in the trailer when she was beating up Knights of Shrek. So she's definitely in the set, and she is back, and she is with a vengeance. She is a good card. I'm very excited to play with her again. So she's 5 mana again. So she's Vivian, Monsters Advocate, 5 mana, 3 and 2 green for a legendary Planeswalker. Vivian enters with 3 loyalty and has a static ability. I know you're telling me, and we haven't had static abilities technically since War of the Spark. So it's interesting to see them already bring them back so quickly, within a year. War of the Spark came out a year ago this month. She has technically 2 static abilities. One of them says you may look at the top card of your library at any time, and then you may cast creature spells from the top of your library. So that's pretty neat. Technically, she adds an extra card to your hand in a way if there's a creature on top. You can always have something extra. You know, if you're in top deck mode, you can just look at the top of your library. If it's a creature, you can cast it. Maybe potentially we may see some, if you're running Fabled Passage, or if we ever see some additional library shuffling, then maybe, you know, you play your Fabled Passage, you look at the top of your library, it's another land. You don't want that land. Let's crack the Fabled Passage, go find a land, look at the top card, it's a creature. Oh, I can cast that creature. All right, I'm going to do that. So that makes it, that's pretty cool. She has two other loyalty abilities in addition to her static text. She has a +1, says create a 3/3 green beast creature token. Put your choice of a vigilance counter, a reach counter, or a trample counter on it. So you basically create your own 3/3 beast, and then you say, hey, what do I want in this situation? Opponent that has no flyers, cool, I'm not going to give it reach. Opponent has 1/1, has a bunch of little chumpers, maybe I'll give it trample. Or maybe I'll give it vigilance. I think vigilance is probably the best one to give it for the most part. Just think of Nissa. So Nissa turns your lands into 3/3s with vigilance and haste. Having vigilance is just amazing because you're able to still get that damage in and block your planes and block for your planeswalker. So I think vigilance is probably going to be the best one, but I think to a degree, these are pretty situational. But I think if you know, you're not in a dire situation where you need one of, you know, trample or reach, you're just going to grab the vigilance one. So her second ability, so Vivian doesn't have an ultimate, as we've kind of seen with planeswalkers with static abilities, they don't typically have ultimates. She has a -2 ability that says when you cast your next creature spell this turn, search your library for a creature card with lesser converted mana cost, put it on the battlefield, and shuffle your library. So basically this means, hey, you know, playing Vivian, turn 6, I'm going to, you know, -2 and cast this 5 or 6 drop. Well, now, since I've cast this, I immediately can go search my library for something extra 5 or less, or 6 or less, or, 5 or less, or 4 or less, and immediately put it on the battlefield. So I think that's really strong, really powerful. People are talking about how this could be a combo enabler for some of the older formats. So Pioneer, you can cast her, play her, and then go 4 mana, I'm going to play Walking Ballista. On her, after you -2 her, and then boom, you're grabbing Heliod out of your deck, and boom, you have Heliod Ballista combo right then and there. So I think that's really interesting. People are saying, you know, you could play Kiki Jiki Restoration Angel, which is another infinite combo from a while back in modern. So she definitely enables some different things. I'm really interested to see how she plays in like a red green monsters deck. There could be like a Sultai monsters. I know Sultai has a lot of good colors, or has a lot of good creatures already. You could play something like that. Maybe even, I don't know, Naya or Teemer, stuff like that. I think she's definitely going to fit in a monster style deck. And I think she's going to be really good in that regard because +1 protects her. Her static ability provides some amount of card draw, and then her -2 is just straight value. That's just straight value if you're playing creatures. So I think she's going to be fantastic. She's going to be a very good planeswalker and a pretty balanced planeswalker for the most part. You know, being at 5 mana, you know, the soonest that you may see her is potentially turn 3 if they have, or not, you couldn't even see her. So the earliest you could see her would be potentially turn 4. Depending, you know, on what they play. So if you're like, if you go into, you know, Goose on 1, and then you go Uro, maybe, I mean, you'd still, just cut this part. So I think she's going to be really good. Our next, we've actually got ourselves another Planeswalker. This is a brand new Planeswalker, native of Ikoria, and this is Luca, Coppercoat Outcast. 3/2 red for a 5 mana legendary planeswalker with 5 loyalty. It has 3 abilities. Its first ability is a +1. Exile the top 3 cards of your library. Creature cards exiled this way gain. You may cast this card from exile. You may cast this card from exile as long as you control a Luca planeswalker. So that is just kind of straight up card draw in like a very heavily creature focused deck. You just plus them up, and if you exile 3 creatures, then you just kind of drew 3 cards. And as long as that, you know, your planeswalker will be up to 6 loyalty, it's very likely that you already have a few creatures on the board to protect it. I think this will be really strong with that +1, just allowing a lot of value. It's got a -2, and that's exile target creature you control. Then reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card with higher converted mana cost. Put that card on the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So let's say you're playing some kind of, I don't know, red-green monsters list or Mardu monsters, Temur monsters, whatever. And you play a really low drop. So you play a 2 or 3 drop, and then you're like, you know what? I'm going to cash this in. I'm going to get something even bigger. And you drop like a 6/6, 7/7, one of these big monsters that are in this set. They're just really big, and they're going to very much impact the board. I think this card's really good. People are already joking about it having a big impact in older formats. So in Pioneer, you could potentially get out an Ulamog on turn 5. You could, if you've got a low, if your mana curve for creatures stops at 3 or 4, and then you just use this -2 to exile it, then the next thing you're going to get is going to be an Ulamog. So you just slam an Ulamog down, and it's like, all right, pass. In older formats like Modern, you can get out Emrakul, so the OG Emrakul. That's going to come out. It's not going to get a cast trigger, so the Eldrazi's cast triggers won't take effect. But, I mean, the old Emrakul is a 15/15, protection from all colors, flying. It's a monster. It has Annihilator. It's just insane. So people are really looking at this as another potential combo enabler in some of the older formats. I'm interested to see what people are going to prefer to use him for in Standard. There's not a bunch of really crazy huge monsters. I know people think of the Titans, but the Titans are very low cost. They're very strong, but they're very low cost. So you don't want to flip into one of those because it'll just sack itself. So I'm really interested to see how we're going to use this card. Then he has a technical ultimate. It takes him just 2 turns to get up to his -7. And that's each creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each opponent. So in multiplayer, pretty cool. If you're playing like a red-green monsters, you play this, tick him up twice. You could even, if you're running doubling season, then just play him. Immediately -7. You could probably kill a few players. I think it's really strong. I don't think in most situations you're going to be leaning on this -7 to finish games. If you're playing a big monstrous creature, you're going to be attacking phase anyways. And his other two abilities are just very strong. So I think more often than not, you're not going to use that pseudo-ultimate that he has. But it could be a nice way to finish off a player. All in all, I think Luka is going to be a really strong card as well. I'm really interested to see, though, where this one fits. I think Vivian has a really good place in some decks. I'm really interested to see what people do with Luka, though. And yeah, that's pretty much it for Planeswalkers today. There's supposedly one more. We're not gonna hear about who they are or anything like that for right now, but I'm sure it'll get revealed in due time. So now that I've kind of talked about a few of the highlights, let's dive right into it. So I've got a few more mythics to talk about today, and they're three more legendary creatures with mutate. First one we have is Vadrok, Apex of Thunder. It's 1 blue, 1 red, 1 white. It's Jeskai, 3 mana for legendary creature, elemental dinosaur cat, 3/3, and it's a 3/3. Let me just say that again. Vadrok, Apex of Thunder. It's 1 blue, red, white. For a 3 mana 3/3 legendary creature, elemental dinosaur cat. Man, I really love these. I love these creature types. They're just, you just smash a bunch of things together and it makes something just amazing. It has the mutate ability for 1 hybrid white-blue and 2 red for a 4 mana mutate ability. It has flying, first strike, and whenever this creature mutates, you may cast target non-creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. So a few things to note here. It's Jeskai colored. You can cast Teferi out of your graveyard, which just, that all in all, that is nuts. That's just gross. You've got a 1/1 or a 2/2. You're paying 4 mana. Let's say they killed your Teferi already. 4 mana. This guy comes out, attaches to a creature. Depending on which power and toughness you want to keep, it could be a 3/3 flying first strike with all these abilities. And then immediately when he mutates, you can cast something from your graveyard, a non-creature spell for 3 or less. So you can pull out an enchantment. You can pull out a planeswalker that's 3 CMC or less. You can pull out a lot. And 2 notable targets are Teferi and Narset. I think this card could find its way into some kind of Jeskai shell. Something like that. Maybe even an Izzet shell. Because if you're only intending to mutate the card, you really only have to run it in a 2-color deck, right? Because it has a white-blue hybrid and 2 reds. So you could play 1 blue-red-red or 1 white-red-red. It really allows you to do different ways. But I mean, I don't know if I'd fully dive into just using it for its mutability, even though it's really strong. Just, you know, kind of lock it in your hand if you don't have a creature, it kind of really sucks. So I think this card's going to be interesting. I think this card is very powerful. I'm just curious what kind of shell it's going to go in. Next up, we've got Snapdax, Apex of the Hunt. It's one red, white, and black for a 4-mana, 3/5 legendary creature, dinosaur, cat, nightmare with mutate. It's 2 hybrid red, black, and 2 white. It's a 5-mana mutate ability, and the creature itself has double strike, and whenever this creature mutates, it deals 4 damage to target creature or planeswalker and opponent controls, and you gain 4 life. So if you want to play it on a turn 4, that's fine. You have a 3/5 double striker, which is already really strong. Double strike is nothing to scoff at. Very strong ability. You know, let's say you turn 5 and you mutate another creature onto this creature, his mutate ability happens, he snipes a planeswalker or snipes a creature, and then you gain 4 life. So I think this is also a really good card. I'm very curious where this will fit in. Given it is Mardu colors, I feel like we're going to be entering an era of potential 3-color decks again. Mana is still relatively good right now. We've got shocks and temples and potentially whatever cycle this holds for us. So I think this card will be really interesting. Don't know what kind of shell it's going to fit in. There aren't currently any really popular red, white, black or Mardu decks or red, white decks. I know there's a white, black deck going around. I don't know really how good it is, but we'll have to see. Our next one is Brokos, Apex of Forever. He's 2 black, green, and a blue for a 5-mana, 6/6 legendary creature, nightmare, beast, elemental. He has mutate for 2, a hybrid blue-black, and 2 green. And he has trample, and you may cast Brokos, Apex of Forever, from your graveyard using its mutate ability. So here we go, seeing Sultai, you know, kind of doing those graveyard shenanigans. So you can play him out as a 6/6 with trample, nothing to scoff at. And if he dies, you can just constantly mutate him back onto other creatures. And just immediately you could turn a 1/1 into a trampling 6/6, which is just crazy. And with mutate, it also doesn't, you know, add summoning sickness. So let's say you have a 1/1 out that can attack. You mutate a 6/6 onto it, make it a 6/6 with trample. It can still attack because it's still the same creature that it was before it mutated. It's still the same creature. So it's really neat how you can kind of just like use these as pseudo pump skip spells to a way. You can just randomly, you know, out of nowhere, hit your opponent for 6 to, you know, more damage, which is just really crazy. And so that's kind of it for the mythics today. We got a few rares to talk about as well. They're all just kind of companion cards. We've already talked about Karuga, which is the Simic companion card. So let's talk about Gyruda, Doom of Depths. It's 4 and 2 hybrid blue-black mana for a 6-mana 6/6 legendary creature, Demon Kraken. It has companion, where if your starting deck contains only cards with even converted mana costs, he may sit in your sideboard as a companion, and you may cast him at any time. When Gyruda enters the battlefield, each player puts the top 4 cards of their library into their graveyard. You may put a creature card with even converted mana cost from among those cards onto the battlefield under your control. So in a way, he's a pseudo mill with a little bit of reanimator stacked on it. It is true that you do have to target a creature that is even converted mana cost. There are quite a few options, potentially, that you could, you know, attach those to. But we'll really have to see. I think this is an interesting card. I know going, you know, blue and black, you could even do Sultai with even converted mana costs. There are a lot of cards that you could cast that are even CMC. You know, you've got Thought Erasure. If you're playing Sultai, you've got Assassin's Trophy. You've got, you know, some discard spells. You don't have the 3-mana slot, so you're losing Murderous Rider. You're losing some pretty key counter spells, though you do, you know, at this point, it seems like kind of more of a control deck potentially, using, you know, Gyruda as your finisher. So you'll have access to 4-mana, so you'll have access to some Chemist's Insights. New 4-mana exile target creature spell, some potential stuff like that. You will not get any like five mana spells. You will get Ritual of Soot because that's a four mana spell. So there's definitely some wiggle room here for some kind of control shell. Very interesting, though. I don't know how good a control shell is if you're not running, you know, typical counters. So I'm very curious about that one. Next off, we've got Lutri, the Spell Chaser. One and then two hybrid blue-red for a 3/2 legendary creature, Elemental Otter. Is this the first time we've seen an otter? Because that's pretty crazy. And he's another companion. And his companion ability says, each non-land card in your starting deck has a different name. And sound pretty familiar? Sounds like Brawl and Commander. It sounds like it's encouraging you to have a singleton deck. And because of this, because his companion ability is so easy to activate in Commander and Brawl, he's actually banned in both those formats. He's a day zero ban immediately after he was revealed. They immediately banned him in Commander and Brawl, saying, you know, like, he's just too easy to fulfill. Like, you know, if you're playing Izzet, there's no reason to not have this as your 101st card because you're already playing a singleton deck. His abilities are interesting, and they're a little more powerful when you can, you know, always have him in your hand. He has Flash, and when Lutri, the Spell Chaser, enters the battlefield, if you cast it, copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. So in a way, he's kind of a dual caster mage. So he can, if you've got something on the stack, flash him in, copy that for 3 mana, do something else with it. So he potentially has some situations where he could be very strong if you're copying the right instant or sorcery. And I think that's why they wanted to just go ahead and gut him in Commander, because, you know, just if you're playing Izzet or you're playing some kind of blue red XX color deck, then this guy's always going to be your 101st, and he's always going to be good. And he's always going to be, just the fact that he's always in your hand will always leave that opportunity to flash him in and dual cast something. So I can definitely understand why he was banned. A lot of people aren't happy about it. I don't really care. I think it's fine. I'm not heartbroken about it. I just think this card would kind of be everywhere in Commander. If you're playing blue, red, and X colors, you're going to put this card in your deck. I will put this card in any of my blue, red decks. Like, why not? Exactly. And finally, we've got Umori the Collector. 2/2 hybrid black, green for a legendary creature, Ooze. And it's a 4/5, and it has companion again. So as you can tell, we're kind of on a companion spree here. This is the last card in the rares that I'm going to be talking about today. But its companion restriction is each non-land card in your starting deck shares a card type. So if you want to make an all-artifact deck, you're making an all-artifact deck. You want to make an all-enchantment deck? Make an all-enchantment deck. You want to make an all-creature deck? Make an all-creature deck. Same with instant, sorcery, any of the different card types. Do it. Go for it. And Umori rewards you for doing so, because when he enters the battlefield, you can choose a card type, and he makes all spells of that card type cost 1 less to cast. So definitely interested to see what kind of decks you could see with this. Being in black and green, you can kind of, since it is hybrid, you can kind of jump different ways. And I'd really be interested to see potentially what like an enchantment deck runs, because, you know, you can run enchantments, but you can also run enchantment creatures, because they share a card type. You can run artifacts and artifact creatures, you know. You could, you know, make an all planeswalker deck if you really wanted to. I don't know if you have enough planeswalkers currently to build one of those in standard, but I don't know. There's a lot of shenanigans you could do with this card. So very interested to see what this card could do. I definitely would see it in more of like a creature deck or maybe an enchantment deck. But other than that, like, I think that's all I could really see potentially in standard as of right now. So yeah, that is pretty much what we're going to cover today in the form of, you know. So that pretty much covers what we're going to talk about today. We're just going to kind of touch the rares and mythics, kind of talk about those. So yeah, I think that's where we're going to end it today. I appreciate you all for listening, and I very, very much apologize for waiting so long or being so busy and all this stuff to get an episode out. So we're going to be back in it. We're back in the grind. Ikoria is revealing. We have new things to talk about. You may even see more episodes appear more frequently as more spoilers just, or more reveals are just thrown at us. So thank you all for listening. Like I said, you can follow me on Twitter at ParchedMTG. or our RTR Forward Twitter page at RTR Forward. You can list us if you're listening to us on Spotify. I appreciate it. Thank you. Go ahead and give us a follow if you're listening to us on any of our other services. Then give us a follow on Spotify. Jump on YouTube. Our videos are also on YouTube. And you can just look up Parched MTG or RTR Forward and find us. Give us a subscribe, hit a like, stuff like that. Thank you all for listening, and have a good day.